it must have been kind of maybe a drastic shift in some ways to suddenly go into Jurassic Park 3 with Joe Johnston at the helm instead, despite you knowing and having worked with him before. Like
Yeah.
how different was that experience for you doing Jurassic Park 3?
Well, that was a number of years later. My time with Steven had sort of petered out by then. And I forget what I did, a lot of things, a lot of other films. And but I was on Ron Howard's The Grinch.
Oh, nice.
And I'd met Ron Howard those early days, the first director really I worked with, up at ILM when he was doing Willow. That was kind of his storyboard guy up there, and that was great. So so I knew him and ran into him. He had me help on stuff along the way, and then there on Grinch with Peter Ramsey and Eric Ramsey and. I think it was just the three of us. Maybe there was a fourth storyboard guy, I can't remember. That was Grinch was really fun. And then I get the call for Jurassic 3 from Kathy, no less, from Kathy Kennedy, which is made me sit up straight. Yes. Okay. So I signed up for that and went there. And Joe and I spent the first several months, right? Just he and I. We were the only ones on it. And we would meet in Burbank at a coffee shop, and Joe would have drawn stuff, or he'd draw boards there. And Joe is just the greatest artist. He's just so good. And he had a certain pen that he liked, and I'd run around art stores trying to make sure he had enough of them. And he would draw in ink, in pen. Just straight ahead, draw it in the shot, frame by frame, by shot. And he wouldn't necessarily, not like Steven, where he would be kind of feeling his way through it, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, sort of steps or poses or steps through the action. Joe would have this shot bang, and he'd have, arrows that, this comes in and goes out, and the camera does this. And it's very, very smart and very precise. And you look at those Art of Star Wars books, those original ones, that you could just, the guy is just an awesome talent. And so it was some of that, a lot of that, with Joe roughing out a first pass. And then there was a little more elbow room with his boards, where you could actually extend the shots in those A, B, C, D ways, and get good poses, and that would sometimes cook up other angles and other shot ideas. But Joe and I had a great time those first several months, and we drew. And I know you're going to ask, but what about the script? And I don't remember. Don't ask. No, I'm sure there was a script. And being the third one, there's a lot at stake, and there's a lot on the line. And studios actually have, this algorithm of, I've heard, they've had forever, that a part two, and then a part three, and then a part four will cost this much, and you can count on it making this much in the box office. So it's a balance of how much do you want to spend for how much you're going to get back, And some directors, and that's, they won't do sequels because it's, Favreau has said it's like twice the work just to get the same level of attention, the same level of enjoyment to the audience that the first one did. It's twice the effort, and you're risking, there's a lot of naysayers, and there's a lot, again, as Favreau said, who are just waiting for you to shit the bed, Say, oh, now he's done it. It's like the first one he did this, but this one he just had to go, whatever. I remember then I had a good buddy. There was one of the stalwarts, one of the old timers, was boarding on it also. George Jensen, who Joe knew since the 70s, who George was a concept artist on Close Encounters and all those big Spielberg movies up at ILM, when ILM was just really breaking it open and feeling their oats with all these great effects and inventing all of this stuff. You know, George was, so he was there boarding, and then another guy, Ricardo Delgado, came on, who was, had just had huge success with the Age of Reptiles comic book. It was this brilliant comic that he came up with in that big stretch of time after Lost World and before Jurassic 3. There was this thirst for dinosaur stories, and he came up with this multi-series thing, which was hugely successful and just drew beautifully. He was doing some boards. And then my friend Rodolfo DiMaggio, who I discovered years before, who was is probably the best illustrator I've ever worked with, just draws like God. I mean, he just is so good, just a natural. And and I brought him on, and Joe, who is, you know, a tremendous artist and a perfectionist, and a perfectionist in the best way, of somebody who's driven to do things great, you know, whatever he does. And Rodolfo's that same way. So they're two sort of peas in a pod. And Joe was funny too, where they replaced production designers about halfway through because Joe designed so much of the Star Wars world. You know, it's not like he was a neophyte with some, you know, pie in the sky idea of design. You know, studied industrial design, could draw anything from any era out of his head. You know, you want a car, you want a jet, you want a building, you want a, you know, cornice work on the building, what era, what, just knew it, just drew it. And you know, and had ideas, he would draw it for the production designer, and then the first production designer, and then the production designer would come back with 15 books of photographs of buildings, and oh, I was thinking some of this and some of that, and then Joe would just draw this thing over again, what he was saying, you know, give it to him, and this went on for months, you know, and so they finally had the creative differences, and they brought in Ed Vareau, who was the guy from Steven's guy before I was back on Hook, and before then the Jurassic and Empire of the Sun and E.T., all those early Steven movies. Ed was now production designing. He'd gone from doing the menial storyboard work in his youth to production designing, and Ed's great. He's a, you know, gets it done, nuts and bolts designer. Elements with the story that I think, because of where I was going with all this blather, was that the sequelitis of, by then, of the third one, you know, you're trying not to spend too much, but you've got to make it lavish enough that it's new and different and exciting and not, you know, retread of the first two. You know what I mean? Got that. You're tasked with that with any sequel. It's got to be a little bigger and trying to be a little better, whether it could be, quote, better or not. In its own way, it's trying. So there was that element to it, which sifted all the way down into the story itself, in a sense, like what was going to happen. Like I quoted before, a cool by cool basis. What would be cool here? What would be new and cool and exciting? And so there were, you know, like in any script you've written, you know, the hardest part is the ending, really making a great ending. And then at the opposite end of the bookend is what would make a great beginning to this story. How do you get into this in a way that's like, whoa, I'm hooked. I'm so there, you know? And with the other two, you know, there was some great stuff in there too. You've got that to not overcome, but to sort of go around it, you know, sort of like, oh, there's a brachiosaur. Let's go around it and see what we find on the other side, you know, to try and, so remember those were challenges along the way. Towards the end of our stint storyboarding, at the ending was a big puzzle. They were open to have us pitch stuff, you know, what about this, what about that, You know, and it became kind of an amalgam of a few different ideas, I think, became the ending.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, like in your storyboards too, it was originally going to be Baryonyx was the big bad dinosaur, and somehow along the line it changed to Spinosaurus. Do you know why that happened at all?
Spinosaurus was a type of Baryonyx, or the other way around? And one of them, I think the Spinosaurus was more aquatic than the other. But for the longest time, Joe called it the just Baryonyx. I mean, that was kind of what we knew it as. And then I don't know where it got this upgrade into something a little more exotic and fancier as a Spinosaurus.
Yeah, it's interesting because at one point I think there was like an early version of the logo that came out, and it had a much more Baryonyx looking skeleton on the logo compared to it ending up being a Spinosaurus. So I guess they had it in mind to be a Baryonyx for quite some time.
Yeah. a beefier head, right?
Yeah.
Like a big raptor or something, but it had the three claws and the longer arms. I think they both did, right?
Yeah.
I think they had it defeat the T-Rex, right? Which was really a bummer, I thought.
Yeah, that was, for the fans especially, that was like a big, a lot of people didn't like that.
I know. It's like, I can't, you know, you just can't imagine the apex predator of all time succumbing to anything, you know?
Yeah.
I still don't think it would have lost.
I know. No, me too.
Had a head. I mean, the other one was so kind of crocodilian and, you know, and thin, but the T-Rex had a head like a freight train, you know?
Yeah.
All that weight and all that mass. Imagine the bite on that thing. It would just, forget it.
Yeah, game break over. You.
Yeah, anywhere it bit would just be like a landmine going off on your haunches.
Yeah, I guess the only thing the Spinosaurus had over it was the longer, stronger arms. Like, maybe that would give it a run for its money a little bit, but otherwise.
Yeah.
And I know, like, in your storyboards too, like, there's a lot more of like motorcycle stuff going on, which would have been really cool to see all that motorcycle action. Although, isn't there one where a raptor suddenly gets on the motorcycle, or somehow it jumps on it as it's going off a cliff?
Yeah. And that was very complicated. I think that eventually went the way of the dodo, because it was too much like the raptors in the tall grass of Lost World. You know, you've got similar kind of setup, you know, chase through a field, even though they're on motorcycles, and you get this way, the raptors get to go full out, full speed. But I think the weird parachute trick at the end of that, where the gang goes over the cliff on the dirt bikes and then, you know, pull their chute cords, and they have those parasail chutes, you know, that got transposed or adapted into the pteranodon, parachute scene.
Yeah.
Which is a lot cooler too, in a way.
Yeah.
You know, air to air combat with these horrible birds and you're flying along with them. It's pretty epic.
That's a fantastic sequence. Probably my favorite from that movie was the whole aviary, all of it. Just so good. So well done.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Were you able to go to any of the LA sets? Because I know they did like the big indoor jungle sets for Jurassic Park 3, which looked spectacular.
Yeah, that was something else. That was really beautiful. The DP, Shelley Johnson, I don't know if he helped engineer it. I know, of course, you know, the lighting would be his game in there. And they had It had some big globe lights. They have like Chinese lantern, sort of those paper circle lanterns, you know, a high-tech version of that. That's about as big as the 76 ball rolled through the gas station. Those were up there. And what was incredible was they had these aerosol misters on set. So they didn't have to smoke it up per se. It had actual mist like a rainforest in it, which is the first time I'd ever seen something like that. It was really, really beautiful. And that's the, you know, the DP's trick. They love that. Any particles in the air that you can put light through, you know, really. Otherwise, you don't see the light. You know, the light lights things up, but you don't actually see the light, the shafts, the element of it. That was a pretty great set. The general vibe of it was pretty great. Like Joe's movies are, you know, as he is, you know, coming from, you know, where he came from, he's very much at home in the art department, you know, more than I think any director that I know. He just feels at ease among, you know, everybody in their alpha state or whatever in the art department. We're all a little, you know, considered a little spacey or dingy or out there or whatever, you know, but Joe's pretty at ease amongst, in fact, I think his office was right there, you know, right. You just stick your head out the door and there he was. And so his participation in the group think, you know, that is in the art department, including the storyboards, was always really, really fun and really rewarding, you know, because he really partook in it, and he really knew how to use storyboards and how to use the art directors in the production side, and you know, not necessarily guide them, but partner with them and with us, and so you really felt like, you know, you were needed, that you were part of the process in a big way, which is always really rewarding. You know, your stuff matters, you know. Yeah. And Joe is, you know, like Steven or like Favreau, you know, or Sam Raimi works harder than anybody, you know. And so that buoys you up, you know, to do your more than you normally would, you know, and do it as best as you can. And because you want to be at that level too, you know, you want to, you know, not just impress, you just want to help that much, you know, in what you can do.